Yes, go ahead now.
Good morning, everybody. It is 9:02 a.m. on January 23rd, 2024. We're here for the annual meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board, Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Jan, can I please have a roll call?
Yes, Ms. Ford. Ms. Ford?
Ms. Ford, is that you ending with the number in 17?
She's probably just delayed. I talked to her last night.
She'll be present as yet.
Yeah.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum?
Morning, everyone. We will jump right into item number one, officers for 2024, letter A, the election of chair. Any discussions regarding?
Klusman will nominate Mr. Bell, who's been doing a fine job, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Klusman. Do we have a second?
Ms. King, I'll second Mr. Klusman's motion. I agree.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. King. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections. The motion passes, and thank you all. Appreciate it, and really look at this as a collaborative team effort, obviously, from everybody. So looking forward to another great 2024. Moving on to item one, letter B, election of vice chair. And I would like to nominate Nick Kovac regarding the vice chair position.
Klusman will second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion passes for the election of vice chair to be Mr. Kovac.
Congratulations.
Moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you work hard enough. I don't have to do much. It's a great job.
Well, like I said, big team effort from everybody. So,
sorry,
without anything.
One quick thing. Oh. Somebody just joined with the number ending 20.
That's Deborah.
That's me.
Okay.
That's Deborah. I had trouble. I couldn't sign in for some reason, so I'm on the phone.
Okay.
Good morning, Deborah. We just got through item number one, and we're moving on to item number two, the approval of minutes. Letter A, the regular meeting held December 19th, 2023. I just have one slight adjustment to the meeting on page number four, last second last paragraph. It just says it was moved by Ms. Klusman. Should obviously be Mr. Klusman. After the medical report list of people.
Can I take a point of personal privilege, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Deborah.
Since I missed it trying to get in, who's here?
Yes, it was the chair is myself and the vice chair is Mr. Kovac.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments regarding the minutes from December 19th, 2023?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman?
Go ahead, Mr. Klusman.
Yeah, Jan, who does also a very, 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 very fine job, caught that error on my salutation or whatever you call it the day after these went out, and she notified me of that. So she corrected it back then. So it was a nice catch by yourself also. I consider that a compliment, by the way. And then I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as they stand. Corrected.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Do I have a second regarding?
Ellie, no second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections for the approval of the minutes from December 19th, 2023? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the minutes passes. Moving on to item three, the Chief Investment Officer Report. This is going to be Eric or David?
It'll be me, Mr. Chair. David is away at a real estate conference, so I'll give the normal performance update, and then I'll just have one announcement afterwards.
Great, thank you, Eric.
Good morning, everyone. So just to start out, we've got it in red at the top, but these are still preliminary returns. Unfortunately, we're still waiting on one hedge fund statement and one small private equity statement. So the hedge fund is probably the one that's more material. And that's really, it's going to determine whether we round down to 9.9 like we're showing you here. I think if the statement comes in at the estimate they've given us or slightly below, we'll end up rounding down. If it comes in better, there's still a chance we round up. Probably don't get to 10%, but we may round up to 10. We're hoping to have that any day now, but we don't have it yet. So just keep that in mind as I go through this update. So the fund ended the month of December with a value of $5.71 billion, the preliminary return of 3.0% net of fees, outperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 17 basis points. The main relative performance drivers was really the fund's style bias, which added 28 basis points, and that was primarily from small cap equity exposure. And then the overall allocation was a detractor, and the fund's overweight to private equity detracted 10 basis points. You can see in the table to the right that the fund has underperformed the benchmark in the one-year period while outperforming in the 5, 10, 15, and 20-year periods. For 2023, the fixed income and real assets asset classes outperformed their respective benchmarks net of fees. 9 out of the fund's 16 active mandates outperformed net of fees. And the fund saw an investment change of $544.7 million. Paid out benefits and expenses of $488.7 million and received contributions of $189.8 million. The January update, I apologize, there's a typo on there that should be through January 22nd, not January 12th, so through yesterday. The fund had a return of negative 0.9% month to date, at a value of $5.86 billion, and 7 out of the 13 active mandates that we have received data for to this point are outperforming year to date. The fund has seen an investment change of negative $52.4 million and has received contributions of $208.7 million. So with those contributions, we contributed $54 million to our U.S. government bond index. And the rest we've kept in our cash account. It's kind of earmarked for benefit payments this month and in future months, as well as any capital calls that the pension fund needs to fund in the future. So that concludes my report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, as I said, I just have one announcement to make.
Thank you, Eric, and the rest of the investment staff. Any comments or questions from board members or staff before we move on to Eric's comment?
One question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, any thoughts on why the benchmark did better than us? Even though good results above our bogey, but what was the difference between the benchmark and us?
Yeah. That's a good segue into the announcement. It's really just a reminder that we have an investment committee meeting on February 8th. So at that meeting, we'll be reviewing fourth quarter performance. Callan will provide some education, and we'll be presenting some due diligence reports. So just to kind of give a preview, Mr. Kovac, to answer your question of fourth quarter and full year performance, there were really two main drivers. It's going to be private equity, just the way we benchmark private equity. I think you've kind of seen that in the monthly and quarterly reports so far this year. So that'll be one driver. The other driver will be kind of the small and value bias that we have in our public equity allocation. So that was in December, as I noted, small cap really benefited the fund as kind of the broader market started to have some positive performance. But you'll remember really the story of 2023 leading up to that was those seven large growth stocks were really kind of driving all the market returns and small and value were lagging. So that's a little preview of what we'll be talking about on February 8th.
Eric, why don't you remind everybody about how the benchmark for private equity works, since there is no real,
Right. That's a good point, Jerry. There's no real index of private equity that we can benchmark against. So what we do is we take the lagged Russell 3000, which is a public market index, and then add a premium on top of that. And when you do that, you can kind of get some strange results where in a rising public equity market, which is what we saw in 2023, that public market benchmark is really running. It was running ahead of private equity, which was still reflecting really negative returns from the impact of the big interest rate increases that we saw in 2022. So it's just something that you have to keep in mind when we're comparing that to the benchmark, because there's not a great way to benchmark private equity, and it's really more important to keep a long-term perspective on it. You can kind of get weird results like this when you're looking at kind of shorter, 1 year and shorter time periods.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Any other comments or questions? All right, Eric, I know you mentioned that kind of segue into your other comments. Go ahead.
No, that was it. Just the reminder about the investment committee meeting. So February 8th, I hope everybody's able to join. It should be a good meeting. 9 a.m.
Thank you, Eric. Anything else, comments or questions, or we'll move on to item number 4, Administration and Operations Committee report. Aicha, I can put us into closed session if you need, or if we...
I think I'll do the report and we can move into closed session after the report.
Awesome. Okay. Sounds good. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. We had a special Administration and Operations Committee meeting on Wednesday, December 20th. Our first agenda item was this closed session that we will be going into shortly. And then we had two other items where we discussed the IT projects portfolio. All upgrades are currently on target to be completed by their deadlines. And there are a lot of other upgrades in progress and currently an IT vulnerability audit that's in progress for improved security. And then the organizational personnel update, there is the pension investment analyst senior position that is out currently. And then the ERS fiscal services assistant was posted internally within ERS. That concludes my report. So now we can go into closed session for the approval of the CLA contract amendment. Please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following item 4A, as provided in section 19.85D, Wisconsin State Statutes. to consider strategy for crime detection and prevention and in section 19.851E, Wisconsin state statutes, deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. So I think we just need a motion to go into closed session.
Bill, make the motion.
Elliot, second.
And then Jen, can you do a roll call?
Yes, Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
9:18.
Thanks.
We'll go back into open at 9:22 a.m.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
We are back into open session at 9:23 a.m. Regarding item 4, letter A. Do I have a motion for the approval of the CLA contract amendment?
Mr. Helling, make that motion.
I heard Tim Helling.
No.
Then Mr. Klusman for a second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any. The motion for the approval of CLA contract amendment passes. Moving on to item 5, new business. Letter A, authorization to sign vouchers.
I'll take this one, Matt.
Jerry, are you?
Yes, I'll take care of that.
Great.
So, in fact, many of the items under item 5 for new business are sort of routine, standard, annual housekeeping items, beginning with authorization to sign vouchers. This is a form that we complete every year. We're asking all of the folks who have authority to sign to place a signature on this form. Jan will circulate this. And some of you may have electronic signatures, others may not, but please sign it. It's what we need to have, process transactions through Northern Trust and U.S. Bank, especially Northern Trust at this point. So that's a pretty routine item. We don't have to vote on this. I just wanted to make you aware that we'll be circulating this authorization. Then on retirements and death claims, these are the December report. And it's, as the title states, retirement, death claims, and refunds. It's basically the payroll for the month. And I guess if there's any questions, we'll be happy to address them. Otherwise, a motion would be in order. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any questions regarding item B, retirements, death claims, and refunds for December? Not hearing any. Do I have a motion to approve payroll for December 2023?
Conrad moves approval.
Helling, second.
Ford, second.
Thank you for the first and second. And that was Ms. Ford on the second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve payroll for December 2023 passes. Moving on to item 5, letter C, conference request, January 2024 board meeting. There is one request for David Silver to attend the Callens 2024 National Conference, San Francisco, California, this April, for an estimated cost of $2,350. Any comments or questions regarding this request? Not hearing any. If I could have a motion to approve the conference request for the January 2024 board meeting for Mr. Silver's trip to San Francisco.
So moved.
Thank you, Molly. Is there a second?
Ellen, no second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, motions for conference requests, January 2024 board meeting passes. Moving on to item 5, letter D, approval of 2023 securities lending budget. Go ahead, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. This is a very arcane item that applies really only to the ERS. It's an annual exercise. We have to approve sweeping the securities lending earnings into the combined fund. Otherwise, pursuant to the global pension settlement, will result in staying in being transferred to one of the old funds, the old retirement plan, as I recall. So Mr. Gopalan should be on the line. He likes to step everybody through the results of our securities lending activity and the earnings that resulted from it. Daniel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Daniel. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, as Jerry said, this is just an annual housekeeping item. So I'll just go over the bottom. You see our beginning fund balance of $781,000, just over that. We had income of just over $1 million, $1,061,000. We paid bank fees to Northern Trust. They were just over $200,000. And then last year we did our administrative transfer of $792,000. This left a fund balance of just under $853,000. So then we would need to transfer $853,000 in order to fund our administrative costs. If we didn't, the funds would revert back to the non-consenters retirement fund, and I think there's around like 100 members in there, and that would not be ideal. Any questions about this pitch? All right, Terry, you want to just, I'll just go over like the 10-year trend. Next page. Put the chart on it, Terry.
Yeah.
Yep, there it is.
There you go. Thank you.
So this shows just the 10 years. The last 10 years of transfers that we've made. As you can see, in 2014, our transfer was just over $1.5 million compared to this year where we're looking at $853,000. There's two main reasons why our securities lending income has been basically cut in half. We have a lower number of securities in separate accounts. A lot of our funds are in commingled funds. That would be like our alternative investments and things of that nature. So if they're in a separate account, we don't actually have the securities to lend out. So that reduces the number of securities that we have available to lend out to borrowers. That's the first reason. The second reason is that we have the highest collateral requirements that Northern Trust requires. We require cash, whereas other lenders may allow borrowers to provide stocks as collateral or any other similar security like that. We require cash, and so we don't have as many people willing to borrow our securities just based on those collateral requirements.
Thank you, Daniel. Eric, if you're still on the line, we have some new trustees, relatively new, and it's been a while since we had Northern Trust in to talk a little bit about security lending and what that activity is all about. Maybe you could remind people what security lending is all about. Why do people want to borrow securities? Just briefly in a paragraph or two.
Securities lending, what we're talking about here is a program that Northern Trust runs for us. And it's just a way to earn a little bit of extra income from the securities that we have in our portfolio. And there's lots of reasons that people would want to borrow securities. I mean, I think that probably the most common one with respect to stocks is if you're going to short a stock, you have to go out and borrow it to, you know, to be able to execute the short. So that's part of it. We also, we lend bonds as well, and that's probably, that's more complicated, I think, for kind of fixed income arbitrage. Hedge funds would kind of be the ones that are maybe borrowing our bonds. I think another reason that people would look to borrow stocks is, you know, for voting. It can be a reason. You know, and I mean, maybe just one other point I'll make is that, yeah, this, as Dan mentioned, this piece is driven by the securities that we have that are in separate accounts. The money that we have invested in commingled funds, those funds can lend securities as well, and they all have different policies and different ways that they do that. But the income from that just goes to the returns of the fund.
Yeah.
So we are still benefiting, whether we're in a separate account or we're a commingled fund, we have the ability to benefit from securities lending.
Yeah.
So just thought I'd make that point as well.
Well, thank you, Rick. I think it's worth noting, too, that securities lending is a significant form of asset management for us, and that there is some risk associated with this. Northern Trust is a guarantor on the loan itself. But you know, there could be defaults on the revenue side of it, and if anybody has any questions or comments, we can probably bring Northern back. It's been a while since we had the SEC lending people in here to explain to the trustees, quite a few years, in fact.
Yeah, you know, Jerry, that's a good point, and that's, as Dan mentioned, that we demand the highest quality collateral that we can to still participate in this. Is because of the risk. We want to do it in the lowest risk way that we can.
Right, so 102%, and we require, well, we'd like to have treasury bonds, but I think the agreement calls for low risk bonds. But still, we can have the Northern people come in again and explain, because I think it's been a long time since the board's had an opportunity to review it. Thank you, Eric.
Welcome.
Thank you, Eric. Any other comments or questions for the approval of 2023 security lending budget before we do a motion? Not hearing any. I have a motion for the approval of the 2023 securities lending budget.
I shall make the motion.
Thank you, Aicha. Do I have a second?
Westman will second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding?
Mr. Chair?
Not hearing it. Yep. Go ahead, Nick.
This is Dan. No, this is Dan Gopal. And,
hey, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
Yep. We just need approval to transfer $850,000. From the securities lending fund into the combined fund. That way it's clear to our auditors and everyone that the board wants to transfer the money.
Yeah. Dan, it's the precise figure right at the bottom of the page, 852,
yep.
821, and nope, 9 cents.
Nope.
Yep, thank you.
It's actually the 853,000. We'll go a little above.
Okay.
Just to make sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan, for that. So I will, did we have one approval for the motion? Do we have to go back and cancel that out? I'll just go forward with a new motion for the approval of the 2023 security lending budget for the $853,000 transfer. I can have a motion for that.
Conrad,
so moved.
Klusman will second.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any objections regarding? No. Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the 2023 security lendings of $853,000 passes. Moving on to item 5, letter E, annual obligation of trustees and ERS officers to submit annual statement of economic interest. Jerry, go ahead.
Okay, in the packet, there's a copy of the form for the 2023 statement based on 2023 activity. It's due and payable, not payable, it's due February 28th, 2024, and each of the trustees and the officers of the fund, executive officers, and my direct reports are required to fill this out and submit it by the due date. I encourage everybody to do it. They are serious over at the Ethics Commission about enforcing this. There are penalties for late submissions, so please don't get caught on that. And we'll give you another reminder next month at the meeting just before the deadline occurs. But please take note of it. The difference this year, the one new thing this year, is you can submit online. They actually have fillable spaces on the form online for convenience sake. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah.
Is that Tim?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I did do it online. It's pretty simple. Walks you right through a little DocuSign. It's pretty easy.
Very good.
Thank you, Tim. Any other comments? Not hearing any, we'll move on to item 5, letter F, approval of Baker Tilly invoice. Go ahead, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item is a new item. It's unusual. It's actually on the agenda out of an abundance of caution. Baker Tilly provided their work papers to the LAB, the Legislative Audit Bureau, for the 2022 audit. And out of an abundance of caution, we weren't entirely sure that the expired Baker Tilly contract provided the staff with authority to pay the bill. So again, just to be safe, we thought we would ask for board authority to pay this bill of $5,382.50. And again, that was for Baker Tilly to provide their work papers for the 2022 audit to the State Legislative Audit Bureau as part of the 2023 audit. That's what that's all about. So we do need a motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions regarding? I'm just looking at that, not hearing any, I just have one comment. Just looking at the hourly wage that we pay, are those typical for this work?
Our arrangements with Baker Tilly were competitive, and you're right, it's $675 an hour. I do recall some raised eyebrows at the Finance and Personnel Committee when our actuary told the committee that he got $400 an hour. Mr. Kovac may remember that. I believe he was on the committee at the time. But as we all know, we've had significant wage inflation, and the professional firms are paying their folks a good dollar. Now, Mr. Coyle is, in fact, the relationship manager. He's not a junior person. He spent 6 hours on this.
And, Mr. Chair, yeah, this is I actually recently talked to Baker Tilly. This is like their partner charge hour. Like, that's their rate for partners, the $675.
Yeah. Thank you, Aisha.
So, yeah, I actually just randomly asked the partner on the city side because I was wondering something, and this is the exact number he told me. So, yes, it's a lot of money.
Nice. Yeah, that reminds me, Jerry, please send me the application to actuary school next chance you get.
Nice work if you can get it, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was going to say if we were missing a decimal point somewhere, but apparently not. That's thank you for the explanation, though. I just saw that number and was wondering. So, any other comments or questions regarding?
And Baker Tilly has grown a lot too, so their charge rates has probably increased a lot too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Any other comments? Not certain any. We'll move forward with the motion to approve the Baker Tilly invoice of $5,382.50.
Conrad moves approval.
Aicha will second.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Aicha. And any objections regarding the approval of the Baker Tilly invoice? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the invoice passes. Moving on to item 6, medical reports, letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for January. Gus, are you handling?
Gus is going to take it, yes.
Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. This is Gus.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell and board. The only medical reports before you today are the medical panel approvals report. Last Friday, we started to deal with the impact of the water main break up the block. Early that morning, our staff had prepared to conduct the medical council meetings, but we didn't have water in the building. So we had to make some quick calls, and we had to decide that it wasn't a safe environment, especially the people coming in that are disabled. So we canceled the medical council meeting on Friday. It was delayed anyway. We're going to be running the February council meetings in about a week and a half. So there are no medical council reports before you because the meetings were canceled on Friday, but those will be moved to the agenda for February. I did send an email out late afternoon yesterday to kind of prepare you for that report or lack of reports. So if there's any questions about that, I'm happy to take them.
I would like to add a couple of points. You know, if, Murphy's Law, to those that I didn't talk to already, actually the landlord asked us to leave the building, and we closed it up, our offices, at noon because there were no sprinklers here, and they considered that to be a safety hazard. And again, this morning, Water Street is blocked off beginning at Wells here at our location, and I guess the Water Street Deli did experience some flooding in the basement. They're closed again today too. The reason it's closed is the water was turned on Friday afternoon late, but this morning they're going to turn the water off again, if they haven't already, in order to work on the water line. So we're kind of operating remote, and a few people in the office, but there is we're told not going to be any water very soon. I think there was some water when I came in this morning, but anytime now it could go off. The other thing is that I think it's noteworthy to mention is we had, again, Murphy's Law. There was one gentleman who came in to town for his exam all the way from Pennsylvania. He had to make a long trip, and his exam was canceled. So we're going to arrange for that to be done remotely. Under the circumstances, would not, I think, be equitable to ask him to incur the cost of another trip in to take his exam. The board rules are pretty clear that you need to have the exam in the metro area here, but given the facts and circumstances in this case, I think it would be an undue hardship and burden for somebody to incur that cost. And I just wanted to mention that so everybody on the board is aware of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry and Gus. Any comments or questions regarding? Not hearing any, I'll put forward a motion to approve the payroll. I'm sorry, motion to approve the medical reports for December.
Thank you, Gus. A motion to approve medical reports for January 2024.
Mr. Helen, I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Tim. And second?
Kovac, second.
Ford, second.
Thank you, Mr. Kovac. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the medical reports for January 2024 passes. Moving on to item 7, unfinished business. Letter A, pending legal opinions in service request report. Go ahead, Jerry.
Mr. McLean, are you on?
I am on. Thank you.
Go ahead, Patrick. Your opinion is on the agenda this month. Go ahead if you want to.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Good morning, everyone. Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean. There's not a much to discuss here. We've already reviewed this opinion, which I issued verbally. It was pending administrative signature at that point. So there's been no substantive changes since we last discussed this issue. I'm certainly happy to go over it again and give a summary if anybody is interested, but the issuance of this written opinion basically just closes the loop on the dual actuarial tables issue that we discussed over a number of months late last year. So with that being said, if anyone has any questions on the opinion, I'm certainly happy to address them, but otherwise it's consistent with what we've previously discussed.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions regarding the legal opinion? Thank you, Patrick. Anything else for part 2, 3, or 4?
I have nothing to add, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Any questions? Not hearing any questions, we'll move on to item 7, letter B, pending legislation report.
We really have nothing to report this month of any significance or law for that matter. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Moving on, item 7, letter C, the executive director's report, inventory of ERS projects. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief on this. Item number 1, personnel update. As was noted in the A&O report, we have a couple of positions to fill that are underway. One is an investment position. The other one is a fiscal services assistant. The latter is probably going to be, we have internal candidates, and so we posted it internally. On member services, we have got 52 new retirees on the payroll in December. And we're expecting 30 approximately this month. So our role of annuitants continues to grow as usual. Retiree deaths were 29 in November. And I'm not sure yet what the December number is, but it was 29 in November. We have some retirement workshops planned for 2024, 2 for the police department and 2 for the fire department. And there may be some more added as various departments request them. On financial services, item number 3, we're preparing to send out the 1099-R forms, the tax reporting forms, at the end of the month to certain of our benefit recipients at the end of this month. Most people receive taxable benefits. And then the good news, the really good news, is that early employer contributions have come in already, and the city and a number of agencies have contributed amounts totaling approximately $211.7 million, as you saw in Eric's report earlier as well. The city also contributed $25.3 million to the ERS for their remaining installment from 2023. So the 24 contribution has been already paid by the city, and I think just as a side note on this, the board will be receiving the valuation report from the actuary. Larry will probably be here in March to present it. He's tied up this month and next month with other clients, but he said he would be available in March, so he will come in and present the valuation for, it's actually a second valuation for 2023. It's got to do with a transitional phase as we close the plan and move the new people into the WRS. That number will not change. It's already been paid, as I mentioned. He will be here to, you know, go over the formal valuation for that contribution payment. And then, in the first for the ERS, he will present another valuation in June that will be for the contribution due and payable by the end of 2025. So we will get two appearances by Larry this year. So I guess we're blessed. So then, moving down, and I'll be happy to answer questions on this. It's pretty complicated stuff, but again, it's all as a result of the transitional arrangements as we close our plan and move into WRS. The board voted on this last March, and this is what's we refer to as the one-year contribution lag. So that for the first, it's important, I'll just spend a second on it. So for the first time, the City Fathers will have the opportunity when they go into their budget deliberations to know what the contribution is going to be for 2025. Heretofore, for the last 30 years or so, they have not known what the contribution will be definitively. They had a budget in November for a contribution for the following year that they were not advised of until the following June. So this one-year contribution lag is consistent with the rest of the public pension plan industry. We're told that most plans do this. The evaluation is delivered in advance so that everybody that has to make the payment knows what to plan for. So that's a positive development, I think. Item C, we've begun the implementation with the new banking relationship, that's U.S. Bank. They're handling the checking account for our monthly benefit payroll, and our IT staff and Mr. Siddiqui have been working diligently on this. It will be in place for the payment next week, our monthly payment. And then as just a side note, anybody that has not cashed their checks that were processed through Wells Fargo will have the ability to do that through the month of June. There's a six-month lay or delay on terminating that relationship so that people can present their checks if they haven't done so already. Any uncashed checks from the Wells Fargo era we'll have to issue stop payments for and have to reissue them on U.S. Bank. So if there's anybody that, if you know of any people that haven't cashed their checks, please tell them to do so by June. On information services, everything is going swimmingly according to our IT staff. Everything is green, and we report on this progress every month or every A&O meeting. We just had one in December, as I should note it. And skipping down to administration, the first item has to do with the new survivorship factors and new actuarial mortality tables, and Murphy's Law is coming into play here again, once again. Just right at the end of the year, Kavanaugh McDonald provided Seamers with the new actuarial factor tables for the joint survivor annuity benefit payments. And what this amounts to, just plain English, this is the price for purchasing an annuity for your spouse or other survivor that you designate as an annuitant, right? So the IRS is covering two lives, and there's a cost associated with that. So that there's a discount in the payment that's made to the annuitant in order to cover the cost of providing a survivor benefit. And this changes every 5 years when we do an experience study, as you're all familiar. And so we are in the process of uploading these tables into Merits and testing them. And late last week, I was informed that in this process, we have discovered another Murphy's Law occurrence, okay? Bear with me for a second here. As you all know, we've had this automated administration system here for many years. It went live in 2006. We began work on it at the beginning of the Terry Siddiqui era. When it was at Terry 20, 2004, 2003, when you first arrived on the property here.
Actually, 2001.
Yeah, 2001, okay.
For GPS.
It's been a space odyssey, a 2001 space odyssey. So, what's that got to do with anything, right? So Merits was installed and it went live in 2006, a couple years before I arrived here. And at that time, we hardwired into the program the approach that was used by our former actuary, Buck Consulting. So it turns out that our friends at Kavanaugh McDonald have factors that are a little bit more granular than the ones that buck used. And what do I mean by the term granular? We discovered this last week while testing this. Both firms have factors for each age that a person is at the time he retires and the age of the survivor, the designated survivor. That's in common, so that doesn't have to be reconciled between the two approaches. But there's a difference with the Kavanaugh approach than from Buck. In addition to that, Kavanaugh, as I said, gets more granular. They actually have a factor for each percentage that a person elects to provide the survivor. So this sort of the standard options are 100% survivor benefit, 75%, 50%. And so Kavanaugh McDonald gives us a factor for every percentage so that an annuitant can select 92% survivor benefit or an 83% for survivor benefit, very down to the last, down to the each year. Buck did not do that. They used age bands. Okay, and Terry, were they five-year bands? I forget.
The percentages were get extrapolated. The bands were there. However, they did it by age. However, they put it in 10% groupings.
Yeah. Okay. So they were not age bands, but percentage bands.
Yeah.
So, as I mentioned before, Merit's was hard-coded for Buck's approach. Right, and so the board last month approved Kavanaugh's approach. We're going to have to consider, probably at the next meeting, which approach we want to adopt. And I've been told by the IT people that, much to my surprise, I would have thought that, that this involved nothing more than a little bit of linear math, but it's a little more complicated than that, as it turns out, and the reprogramming effort would be substantial and be expensive, and it would delay the implementation. So we're probably going to come back next month and ask for authority to have the Kavanaugh people give us factors only for the Buck approach so that we don't have to overhaul Merit's. It would be a big undertaking and expensive. We have the factors already for that, but what we really need is the board approval to do it. To do it differently than what the actuary gave us, because we don't want to take the chance that that we're making payments that are not authorized by the board. Specifically, you'll see that the difference here is extremely minor. I mean, we're talking about numbers that are three places to the right of the decimal point, but we want to make sure that it's accurate. We certainly don't want to have any benefit payment calculations that are not really according to the authorization granted by the board. So we're going to come back with that, but otherwise everything is going well, like Terry, on the testing and the implementation. So we're still on track to implement this in the spring. May 1st is our target date. So moving on from that, item B, as you know, the ERS is now closed to new hires as of January 1, 2024. The implementation of the new hire data reporting conversion to the WRS is well underway and it's on track. We've been working with the comptroller's office, the payroll people, and also had some conversations with the treasury folks about payroll deductions and the timeliness of reporting them to the folks in Madison. And then pursuant to the WRS plan document and the agreement that the city has entered into, the ERS is scheduled to report this wage and service data for the new hires beginning on a monthly basis, beginning in February for the January new hires. And I'm told that we've already had, when I wrote this report, approximately 30 people that have been hired since the beginning of the year that will be enrolled in the WRS, and that activity continues. So, but the good news is that it seems to be on track, and we'll know for sure when we try to run it live, but the testing is going pretty well at this point. Item C. I provided a video link for a presentation of a report that's issued by the National Institute for Retirement Security. Now it's not an agency. It's an offshoot of NCPERS, which is our trade association. The title of the report is No Quick Fix. It has to do with the experience of six state pension plans as they closed. If you haven't seen it, I would urge everybody to take a look at it. At least, it's an hour long, so that could be a kind of a burden, but you don't need to look at the whole thing if you don't want to. I would just urge you to take a look at the experience of the folks in the Michigan plan, the Michigan State plan that was closed 26 years ago. The upshot of the report is that basically when you close a plan, it's a game changer. All kinds of things start to happen. Assets begin to diminish over time. And the whole purpose of this is we want to avoid depleting assets before the benefit payments are completed. And by the actuary, by the way, the actuary projects that benefit payments will not be completed from the ERS until the 22nd century, well into the 22nd century. So there's a 100-year timeline on winding this plan up. So the point of this all is that many of these plans have found that over time they need to take another look at their investment portfolio with an eye towards avoiding what I call dipping into principal. Okay, it's not favorable to have to sell risky assets in volatile markets when the markets are down, because when you sell stocks, for example, when they've declined in value, you never get a chance for them to recover their value. So there's a point to this this exercise, and David and I and Callan and Larry have talked about what is the appropriate way to begin looking at investment strategies for a closed plan. And there's a fixed income review that was scheduled already for later in the spring. We will be bringing that to the board, and there'll be a robust discussion. I would expect that this discussion would go on for a lot more than one meeting. The issue of depleting assets is really not an immediate issue for this fund. You may not begin to see anything that looks askance for 5, 8, 10 years, but it's never too soon to start planning to make sure that the benefits are secured for the benefit of the members and beneficiaries. So this video sheds some light on what happens when you close a plan and how the portfolio tends to and the trust tend to behave after plan closure. So enough said on that, but there is a link that I did send an email as well with that, and I would invite you to take a look at it. And then lastly, just to repeat myself again, how's that for a yogiism? Repeat myself again. February 28th is the deadline for the Statement of Economic Interest report with the Ethics Board. So thank you for your attention. I appreciate it. That's my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions regarding?
Question answered.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Jerry, on that, those two numbers you cited on the payment for 2024, is that all the employers that paid already, or is there somebody else out there still? Because I know the city always pays early, but I've never seen the others.
Well, we do have the Wisconsin Center District. Oh, that's in there, WCD. And also yeah. The MATC.
Okay, MATC.
We've had some discussions with MATC about this. That's a small employer that basically did not have any active employees since 2015 in our plan. I'm glad you mentioned this, Tom. It's worth noting for a minute. MATC became a state-sponsored educational institution back in 2015, and so their people all at that time, new people began to be enrolled in the WRS as a state, sort of as a state agency. And so they haven't had any active people in our plan. And this is another quirk of actuarial science, I guess. Before Act 12, we did not have any unfunded liability with respect to retirees, okay? We had asset coverage, so that if we had to pay off all the benefits on one afternoon, present value of the benefits to the retirees, we had sufficient assets to do so. Okay, so there was more than 100% asset coverage. It was always comforting when I talked to retiree groups. I could tell them we had 130% asset coverage over the retiree liability. And the charter does provide that the retirees have first claim on the assets. However, due to Act 12, the discount rate was mandated to be reduced to the same rate as the WRS, which is currently 6.8%. And with a reduction in the discount rate, the liability accordingly increases, and there's no longer asset coverage sufficient to cover all retiree lives. And so where we didn't have, and what's that got to do with MATC? So MATC didn't have any unfunded liability because they didn't have any active lives in our plan after 2015. And there was no unfunded liability for retirees at that point. Now, however, there is unfunded liability for retirees, and they have, for the first time, are going to have to begin servicing that, and it came as a sort of a surprise to them. The contributions are not great. It's about $259,000, but that's substantial. They're a smaller entity. And also, with the adoption of Act 12, the actuary recommended and the board accepted the idea that we would no longer service unfunded liability based on relative payroll. In other words, the agency payroll compared to the payroll of all of the agent of all the participating employers, but we would there would be a level dollar payment based on pro rata based on your share of unfunded liability. And again, MATC for the first time had unfunded liability, so now they for the first time since 2015 anyway, so now they have to pay. And this came as a sort of a surprise, and we've met with them and talked to them about it. They were a little bit relieved to find out they didn't have to pay it all at once. There is a provision in Act 12, as many of you know, that allows them to service that over 30 years. And so their contribution will be approximately $259,000 for 2024. And they have to the end of this current year to make that contribution. It's due and payable on December 31st, 2024. So sorry for that long-winded explanation, but it gives you some indication that Act 12 was indeed a game changer for all of the participating employers as well as for the ERS itself. Thank you.
Yeah, great. That helps. And is that number, the 211.7 and the 25.3 from the shore up of 2023, is that 25.3 inclusive in that 211.7 number, or is that in addition to did we receive?
Well, that's earmarked specifically separately for the remainder in 2023, so it's outside the 211.
Oh, okay. No, Gary, Ed, this is Dan.
Yes, uh-huh.
Dan.
Yes,
the 200 million, I believe, includes the 25 million.
Oh, it does. That was not our understanding. Sorry for that.
Yep. Yeah. And then going back to your question, Mr. Klusman, pretty much all the employers made their contribution early. The exceptions are HACM. Yeah. They're still working on coming up with the funds. At NPS, they paid a partial. They usually just pay whatever funds they have available at the time. So they made about half of theirs. The rest of them, MATC is planning to make their payments. WCD, usually they pay at the deadline. They actually paid early this year. The city paid, of course. The Waterworks paid as well. And MSD and Veolia also paid early.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess my next one is a kind of two-part question. Since the discount rate changed to 6.8, all these prepayments are discounted 6.8?
For 2024 and beyond.
Yeah.
That's the planned interest rate. And interest. Okay. If people pay after the first of the year, if agencies pay after the first of the year, then there will accrue interest at the planned rate, which, as you point out, is 6.8.
Okay, good. And then just last question, so we know what we're in for. Larry's coming in March with this final 2023 valuation, and then we get our standard January 1 valuation in June. And do both of these use the new Act 12 mandated 6.8 rate, or are we either still using the old 7.5?
It's both 6.8. The valuations I hesitate to do this, but I probably should. Both valuations are as of January 1. The yeah. one that he's going to produce in March is as of January 1, 2023. It's the second January 1, 2023 valuation that he will have issued, okay? This one, however, is, as it, the title will note, is the valuation for January 1, 2023 for the purpose of determining the 2024 contribution, which has now been paid by the city, for example. And that is at 6.8% because it's for 2024. And then the valuation he will present in June, scheduled for June, is for the contribution for 2025, and that, of course, is also going to be at 6.8 unless the WRS changes theirs. If they lower it, then we'll have to follow suit pursuant to Act 12. But so far, as we know, it's still 6.8, and that's what he is going to prepare it at. That's what he's, he hasn't started work on it yet, but he will very soon. So yeah, 6.8 as far going forward, unless it's revised by the Big Sister plan in Madison, the WRS. That's how it works.
Okay, just wondering how that all played out.
Yeah, and also okay. I should have credited you again, Tom. Thank you for suggesting we provide this this link to the NERSC to everybody, to the National Institute for Retirement Security. It's a worthwhile report that indicates that, you know, after a plan closes, you know, things go on. It is a game changer, and plans tend to have a different experience after closure than they've had before closure. And we all need to be aware of that and begin to consider how to deal with it. So thanks again for providing that link.
Good, thanks. And thanks for sending out the video presentation, because for us regular people, it's nice to have someone summarize it for us the way they do in the video, as you all do in these meetings, because I think if we all received a big stack of paper and had no staff to walk us through these meetings, our job would be much more difficult. So understanding that whole thing about plan closures and what happens, and as you have described it, is very helpful for us lay people, I think. So that's why I'm glad you put it out for the rest of us too, to understand what we probably are going to be in for in the future. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So that's the report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Tom. Any other comments or questions? Not hearing any, we will move on to item 8, informational. We have items 8 through K. There is no comments or questions. We will place those on file. But any comments or questions regarding?
Mr. Klossman, sorry to be a pest, but I have a question of Patrick, if he's still on.
You bet. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Patrick, I'm familiar with that first case in part one that ran its course and is done. But the third case, is that somehow different or same? I just saw it pop up on here, but I don't ever remember us discussing when that came in.
Sure. Yeah, let me just get to the report real quick. You're referring to page one, part one. Case?
Yeah.
So there's quite a bit of background there. So as the board will recall, the 5.8% pension offset case, the original case, which included both the Local 215 and MPSO unions, originated in 2018, and we got the unfortunately unfavorable Wisconsin Supreme Court decision early or in the spring of last year. Subsequent to that, the same attorneys, the McGillis Weimer law firm, were essentially seeking to collect fees from MPA covered members as well. And so they filed this litigation essentially as a mechanism to prevent anyone else from coming in to try and collect fees from MPA covered members. It is a class action litigation that purports to represent all MPA members affected by the original 5.8% lawsuit. And I'm not sure how far we want to go into it, but essentially, we informed them that they didn't need to file a second lawsuit because we were already going to be providing the benefits that they sought through the litigation. But unfortunately, it has persisted, and we have a pending motion to dismiss in that case, along with it's, and I don't want to get into the weeds, but there's been a motion to consolidate that case with the original case. The MPA union has now moved to intervene and is opposing the motion for fees extending to MPA-covered members in the original case. And I suspect if the motion to dismiss in the new Frank Potashnik case is not granted, that they'll probably move to intervene in that case as well and oppose it. So it's really, the roll-up on that is that it's the same issue. It's just an effort to effectively recover attorney's fees from MPA covered members, candidly. So that's kind of the short version of it, but there's quite a bit of procedure, motions, and moving parts around the case.
Wow, okay, yeah, sorry, okay, thanks.
Yeah, sorry for the can of worms, but it's we're hoping to get a resolution or at least clarification on the issues in those two cases here in the next couple months. So hopefully we'll have some favorable news to report back to you.
Well, also the upshot here is that, you know, we were planning to pay this out last summer, right? When the judgment came down and we were all set to go, and then we got this stay order from the court. So I'm sure there are many of our affected beneficiaries, you know, the disability retiree beneficiaries who are waiting for the payment. You may be hearing from some of them, Tom, but at this point, we're not in a position to be able to pay because the state order is still in place. So
I'll just add to that, with the in conjunction with our motion to dismiss in the Potashnik case, we also did file a motion to lift that stay, essentially arguing that because the only reason for the stay was to seek attorney's fees and the mechanism that they were attempting to use to get attorney's fees didn't apply to the case, that the stay wasn't doing anything essentially other than harming, you know, these innocent members who are just waiting on their benefits. So it's something we're very cognizant of. We're trying to get these benefits to these members as quickly as possible. And like I said, hopefully we'll get a resolution from the court here in pretty short order.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Tom and Patrick, Jerry. Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I just had a question for the conferences. I know, or for the due diligence in London, if there's any more info on that, I'd be interested. I think Eric's taking the lead on that one.
Yes, Mr. Helling, there's no information at this time, but I would be happy to include you in the planning, you know, as I start coordinating with the managers that I'm going to be meeting with over there, if you're interested in attending.
Yeah, I am. And then one more question, too, on the NCPRS one in Palm Springs. Is that Advanced Trustee Studies, is that a new program? I did the NAF one. I'm just wondering if that's like a new program that they're starting, or if anyone has the info on that.
Well, they have a cycle they go through. They've had advanced studies before, but they run it in an annual cycle, and it's not always the same time. So we can get you what they have available to us right away. I'll call Hank today, and some of our other trustees have attended that in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Jerry. Jerry, I'd be interested in that too, regarding that advanced training. Might be out there presenting in that conference as well. So that'd be great if you can send that to Tim and I and anyone else that's interested. Any other comments or questions? Or is item 8 informational? Not hearing any, A through K will be placed on file, and I will entertain a motion to conclude this meeting.
Ms. King will make that motion.
Thank you, Molly. Do I have a second?
I'll have a second.
Thank you, Tim. And the meeting is concluded at 10:21 a.m. Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.